The next day, the day after preparation day, the leading priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate. They said, "Sir, we remember that while the liar was still alive, he said, 'After 3 days, I will rise from the dead.' So give the order for the tomb to be guarded closely till the third day. Otherwise, his followers might come and steal the body and tell people that he had risen from the dead. That lie would be even worse than the first one." Pilate said, "Take some soldiers and go and guard the tomb the best way you can." So they all went to the tomb and made it safe from thieves by sealing the stone in the entrance and putting soldiers there to guard it. The day after the Sabbath day was the first day of the week. At dawn on the first day, Mary Magdalene and another woman named Mary went to the tomb. At that time, there was a strong earthquake. An angel of the Lord came down from heaven, went to the tomb and rolled the stone away from the entrance. Then he sat on the stone. He was shining as bright as lightning and his clothes were white as snow. The soldiers guarding the tomb shocked with fear because of the angel, and they became dead like men. The angel said to the woman, "Don't be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus, who is being crucified. He is not here. He is risen from the dead, as he said he would. Come and see the place where his body was, and then go quickly and tell his followers, 'Jesus has risen from the dead. He is going into Galilee ahead of you, and you will see him there.'" Then the angel said, "Now I have told you." The women left the tomb quickly. They were afraid, but they were also very happy. Then ran to tell Jesus' followers what had happened. Suddenly Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." The women came up to him, took hold of his feet and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Don't be afraid. Go and tell my followers to go to Galilee, and they will see me there."
There's not really a get down time this morning, band. I'm sorry about that. So we're here to mark Easter. We mark Easter because of the resurrection of Jesus. It reminds us that the Christian story opens with a tomb. So I've reflected on this more and more this year. It's come to me that this is so. As I said, both on Maundy Thursday and on Good Friday in our services. If it were not for what happened on Easter Day, if it were not for the empty tomb and the appearances of the risen Jesus to his disciples and to others, if it were not for that, we would not be here today. The crucifixion of Jesus, which of course most people know about and are aware of, would not even be a footnote in history. Because thousands of people were crucified in Jesus' day. And thousands of good people have died for a cause down through the ages. And to that extent, Jesus, on the face of it, was just like all of them. Except that at the heart of our faith is not just that Jesus died, but that he rose again. So for Christians, it starts here. If somebody wants to say to me, "Well, why are you a Christian? What's so special?" I want to say, "Well, I need to tell you about the empty tomb. I need to tell you that Jesus defeated death. He'd promised that he would, but nobody believed it till he did. This is where it begins. This is where it gets interesting, the idea of a man coming back to life. It's what makes the Christian faith, rather than the Christian fact, if you like. It is by faith we believe this. I cannot give you a final scientific proof or Sherlock Holmes type piece of evidence, but I can say that I believe that all the pointers are in this direction, that Jesus rose from the dead. And I see it throughout history in the lives of men and women that were transformed by his transforming love. But it begins earlier. It begins right back in the mists of time. There's a story that the most ancient peoples used to tell, and that was picked up by the writers of Genesis, that when God created everything that is, he created humanity as part of his creation. But he gave humanity the ability to make choice, because he wanted humanity to love him and love his creation. And there is no such thing as coerced love. We all know the melodrama or the film where you've got the one person who tries to force another person into loving them. I love you, therefore you must love me. But God loves us so much that he says, for this love to be properly reciprocal, for it to come back and mean something, it has to come from you voluntarily. It has to be something you choose. And so the story of Adam and Eve, right back in the beginning, shows and is written in, if you like, to the mists of time, about men and women actually choosing against God, choosing not to go his way, choosing not to live life for him. So, God does not take the whole thing as we would, a sheet of paper on which we'd been writing a letter which was perfectly written, beautiful grammar, beautiful writing, until we made a mistake right in the middle of the page and we have to start again. God said, no, I'm going to work this out with you. A price has to be paid for the disobedience, if you like, so that we can get things right again. But I understand you're not strong enough to do that. I understand that you can't bridge the gap that you have made through turning away from me. So I'm going to send my own son to sort it out for you. And Jesus came into the world, and we celebrate his coming into the world at Christmas. And he grows into the man Jesus, who ministers in the name of God, who talks about God in ways that people have never heard God being talked about before, because he tells them about God in simple little stories connected with everyday life, called parables. It may be about a woman who once lost a precious coin from her set of precious coins, and how she searches and searches till she finds it. It may be about the sower that everybody had seen in the field, who in those days would scatter his seed to the left and the right. The trouble is, some of the seed landed on good ground, but other seed lands on stony ground. Other seed lands on ground where there are thistles that will come up and stop it from growing to fruition. And all the while, Jesus is taking images like that of saying, if you want to understand what God's kingdom is like, it's like this. But it's not just a matter of his teaching. There comes a point when he does what he came to do. When he comes to Jerusalem, where he is regarded by the authorities in Jerusalem as not being acceptable and needs to be done away with. And he is falsely accused, he is sentenced to death, he is put to death on a cross, and he is put into a tomb, as dead as you and I will be when we are dead. But this story has power about it too. Because on the third day, he rose from the dead. And he rose from the dead to really give us another parable. And the parable is this. Just as I died, he's saying, and I rise to new life, so when you die, it needn't be the end. But you too can share in this life. If you will identify with me, if you will let me be your Lord, if you will walk with me day by day. And he says, I want you to remember the story. And in order to remember the story, I'm going to give you two things. Some bread and a cup with some wine in. We're Baptists, so it's actually fruit juice. Anyway, some bread and the cup. And he said, when this bread gets broken in this way, when you meet together and do this, I want you to remember that I died for you, that I was crushed physically. And when you drink this, I want you to remember that it represents a promise I have made to all those who will come to me, I will forgive their sin. So whenever you eat this and drink this, you're remembering the story. But he said, there's something else. That's not the end of it. It's not just about the cross bit. Because I also make this promise to you, that when you do this, I will be with you. In your midst. Where you are. Closer to you than breathing. Close enough for you to reach out and touch. Close enough for you to reach out and say yes to. And having reminded yourself of the story and that this story has great personal significance, then go and live it. Live the resurrection life. Too often the Christian story has been represented as a Christian story of limitation, of reducing down. But Jesus said, I've come that you should have abundant life, that you should have the best of life. Now that doesn't necessarily mean the best of life materially. It means the best of life in relationships, the best of life in relationship with me, God, the best of life in your relationships with one another, that you will truly live life to the full. It's for living. And we're going to do something now which connects right in with that. We're going to share in the bread and the wine in communion. Now let me say one or two words of explanation. Some are very practical, and others are more to do with our faith. We in this church welcome everybody who loves the Lord Jesus or who wants to say yes to Jesus to receive the bread and the wine from this table. We don't ask you to be a paid-up member of this church or any church, but the question is, are you willing to follow Jesus? Are you willing to admit that you've gone wrong, that you've done it wrong at times, that you've not always had God at the centre of your life? Are you willing to say, okay, but I want to follow you now? That's the fundamental question. And for those of us who do hold to the faith, it's an opportunity for us to say, yes, I'm going to carry on following. In this church too, we do not define who receives the bread and the wine by age. The question is, do you love Jesus? And if you can say, yes, I love Jesus and I want to find out more about Jesus and know the truth about God, then you are welcome to come and receive the bread and the wine from this table. I realise to some extent we have to say to families, in the end this is the parents' final decision, but we want you to know that nobody will be turned away. Practically, we're going to